This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. expresspros.com.
High noon, Jones and Keefe, WEEI. We got the week in review at 12:45. Mike Vrabel talking live at 1:30 down in Foxborough. You'll hear that live here on Jones and Keefe. So stay tuned for it with all your phone calls, 617-779-7937. You heard Jason Tatum there putting some of the blame on himself, all of the blame for the final play, final sequence at the end of Game 2. Celtics trail the New York Knicks 0-2. In their best-of-seven series with Game 3 set for tomorrow. And we figure we can break it down with former Providence head coach Tim Welsh joining us here on Jones and Keefe. Tim, thanks for joining us here. High noon.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be with you guys. I just want to get something straight before we get going here. I heard you talking about your skill levels and competition, Adam, with
yes.
your juggling. And that I can make a killer spaghetti carbonara. So, you know, if you guys are interested, we could enter that in any type of competition moving forward. So.
Definitely. Oh, that'd pair nicely with our skills.
Oh, that sounds
wonderful. I'm sure no one ever made you that when you were at Hobart, Rich.
So that's true.
I can come up to Boston and stir one up one day. But, yeah, thanks for having us on.
No, well, of course. Speaking of brags, I ran into Tim at TV the other week at NBC Sports Boston.
I know you guys are TV guys, yeah.
And so I didn't realize you were quite the Renaissance man that you are. We might as well start with this. You have like sneaky Bill Belichick. You had all kinds of Belichick intel that we were talking about on TV the other week. That's kind of blown up.
Yeah, I think that's a stretch, Adam, that I had all sorts of stuff.
He's a Belichick insider. Wow.
It's kind of common knowledge amongst the ACC people that we do know that I don't think they're going to be very good this year. So that'll be even more fun to watch when, you know, those beautiful press conferences. But, you know, I do know the people, some of the media people in the area down there, whether it's the ACC network or the locals. And, they haven't been really welcomed into the fraternity yet. So and we kind of know what that looks like up here. But, you know, as a college coach and having been one and been with different college coaches and at different universities, I mean, obviously, it's a totally different nut than being a pro coach. You got to do a lot of things. And, you know, Jeff Van Gundy once told me, he says, you know, the difference between being a college coach and a pro coach, he says, my phone never rings when you're a pro coach. No one's ever talked to you. And I've been to Brad Stevens' office, and his kids are running around, and his wife's there. But when you're a college coach, you have so many things thrown at you all the time and so many responsibilities. And people that think they own you, including the boosters that are paying a lot of your salary. So if you're not keeping those people happy, then you're starting off on the wrong foot. That's all I'll say about that. But he's got the 6 Super Bowl rings, and it's really going to come down to if he wins or not. And right now it doesn't look like they're going to be that good this year because of the quarterback situation. But time will tell.
So before we get to the Celtics, speaking of college coaches and your time at Providence – one of the all-time great coach rants was Jim Calhoun at UConn after you guys beat him, and he was asked about Ryan Gomes, and he goes on and on and on and on about Ryan Gomes and how he bleeped up. He should have gone after Ryan Gomes. Of course, you had Ryan Gomes. Did you hear that live? Were you in that room? What's the story on from your side of things when Calhoun went nuts about that?
Well, the great thing about that story, Rich, is that every year on the anniversary of it, somebody tweets it out, whether it's Big East memes or something. Then somebody sends it to me. And finally, my son's 14 now, and I finally show it to him. I've been wanting to show it to him for like 10 years, but I just couldn't because of the language. But because the full version, uncut version, is classic. No, actually, you know, that was before Twitter and cell phones and all this other stuff. I think it was 2004. Mm-hmm. And I got a call. We rolled into Hartford, and they actually won the national championship that year. And they were number two at the time. And we went in, and we beat them pretty good. We beat them by like 12 or 14. And Ryan Gomes just had an unbelievable game. And Ryan was from down the road. He was from Waterbury, Connecticut, and UConn didn't recruit him. I mean, how could they? I mean, Ryan was like, and Jim told the story, he's like 6'5", and he was overweight, and, you know, he really wasn't that well coached, coming, bounced around a couple schools, whatever. There's no way they were going to recruit him. I mean, we hardly recruited him until the end. I mean, he was going to go to Siena, I think. And then we jumped in right at the end and got him. And, you know, he went in and had 28 and 15 against the Mecca Okafor. And he just absolutely destroyed UConn single-handedly. And Jim had been leading up to the game. Jim had been very complimentary about Ryan. Explained the whole story, the whole nine, why he didn't recruit him, how, you know, he liked him. He's a great player, great kid, blah, blah, blah. But after the game, okay, he was annoyed, of course, after they lost. And somebody asked him again. I guess, do you wish you would have recruited him, or why didn't you? Something like to that effect. And then off he went. You know, I happened to be home back in Rhode Island at the time, and one of my assistants called me and said, "Coach, you got to turn on SportsCenter. Calhoun went off after the game." And, you know, in today's day and age, you'd see it 10 minutes later. But this was like 3 or 4 hours later. I did the press conference first. We got on the bus. We came home. I'm ready to go out to dinner that night. We're happy as heck. We just beat UConn on the road. And all of a sudden, now Jim went off. And then the reporters started calling me and said, "Well, is Jim going to apologize to you?" I said, "Heck no."
Yeah, why not?
Jim just put Ryan Gomes on the map.
Yeah, that was amazing.
So that was the story. And Jim and I laugh about it. We're good friends. We laugh about it to this day. But yes, that story still is alive and well out on the interwebs, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Well, no, and for sure, that's ex-Celtic Ryan Gomes, played for you at Providence College. Tim Welsh, former Providence head coach. You can catch him Sundays in Providence, 103.7 WEEI with Meter, 7 to 9 every Sunday morning. Here all over WEEI. Let's focus in on the Celtics. You're talking Ryan Gomes, ex-Celtic. They're down 0-2 to the New York Knicks, game 3 tomorrow at MSG. What's the biggest factor in why the Celtics are down 2-0?
Well, I just think there's a myriad of factors, but the biggest thing is that Tatum hasn't played like an all-star. I mean, you can't step up and play in the second round of the NBA playoffs and do what he's done the last two games, especially the other night, the second game too. I mean, just a total no-show. I mean, we've seen it before with him. You wonder why it happens. I don't know if there's a reason. I think he's just too aloof at times. He's not locked in enough. He's not gritty enough. The people that I know around that know him kind of say the same thing, that at times he just kind of floats out there, and he saw it the other night. He was floating and right down to the last play of the game, you know, when he couldn't even get a shot off coming down the floor. So he's got to play better. And I think he will. Usually he does when his back's against the wall, but we'll see if it's too late. I mean, you saw him in the Orlando series. You know, the stuff that he's hurt, I don't buy that. I mean, the end of the Orlando series, he was just the best player in the playoffs the last 3 or 4 games in that series. So having said that, he's just got to lock in. I mean, I don't know what the problem is, if it's, you know, the matchups, whatever, it doesn't matter. You can't say I'm one of the best players in the world and go out and play like that in the playoffs.
Knowing that the philosophy is to take a lot of threes, and if it's an open three, you absolutely take it. At what point, though, as the head coach, do you step in and say, all right, we're shooting 25% as a team, so even though we are getting good looks, everybody is cold, from three, or do you go the Missoula route and say, keep, you know, make the next one, whatever it is, make the next one?
Yeah, I know math comes into play and you think it's going to turn around, but at some point, especially when you have the lead, Rich, it becomes the clock as well. It's not just about the scoreboard and threes versus twos. It's about how much time is left and how many actual possessions are left in the game, and using a little bit more clock and finding a good three, not getting the ball in the lane and dribbling it back out to the corner and just turning and firing. And that's the problem, I think, you saw, especially in game one. It's just they just didn't look at the clock. They played like there was no clock. Like it was just first to 110 wins this game. And, you know, Joe talked about it after the next day. He said there's different ebbs and flows. And I think obviously what he's referring to was time and score. I mean, that's so important. I mean, you watch all these games and you have to have an understanding of that. And it's not just the coach, it's the players. The players, that you have to look at the clock and understand what a good shot is and how you're up by 20 points. There's only so many possessions left in the game. And, and I don't mean taking air out of the ball for sure, but New York is not a very good defensive team. I mean, Tom Thibodeau is an excellent defensive coach. We all know that from his days back here with the Celtics as an assistant. He was a specialist on defense, but you got two weak links out there on the floor most of the time in Brunson and Towns. And, you know, you got to exploit that. You have to exploit that. You got to try to get Brunson in switches and take him to the basket, because he can't defend you. If you're driving, if you get him in a switch on the wing, it's 2 points. And I don't care if it's two is less than three, it doesn't matter. Two is two. And when you keep chucking and missing, you've got to try to reestablish and rethink your plan as the game goes on.
Right. Three is more than two, but two is a heck of a lot more than zero. I'm right with you on that math. I'm no math expert, but I'm with you on that. What do you think of Missoula and his approach with Mitchell Robinson, the hack of Mitch, which has us perplexed? It was extra frustrating in game two where they weren't even sending him to the line. They were just fouling him just to put New York in the bonus, which didn't make any sense. What's your thoughts on that approach and the viability of Joe Mazzulla hacking away at Mitchell Robinson?
Well, you know, I know Detroit did it, but you're better than Detroit. No one disputes that. I wouldn't copy Detroit what they're doing. I would just do what they did in the regular season, which I don't believe they did that in the regular season. And it worked out pretty well for me. Mitchell Robinson's a nice player, but I don't think you want to focus your game plan on him. I wouldn't do it. I think it takes a little flow out of your game. Takes just the wind out of your sails. I know you don't play that way all season long. Now you're playing that way. I don't know if that's an organizational philosophy. It came down after looking at analytics. I have no idea. I was surprised they did it. I would think they're going to move away from it. I would think they're going to move away from a few different things tomorrow. They're smart. Brad's there. Brad's going to have his input for sure. He's not going to try to coach the team, but I know he enjoyed Joe Duke talk. And you know, I would go small too against them. I would go smaller. Late in the game, I thought that they'd gotten some bad matchups out front when Horford was trying to guard Brunson, because Thibodeau just got him in switches, and all of a sudden you're looking at Horford trying to guard Brunson out on the perimeter, and that's a no-win situation. I would go small. I'd put Tatum on Towns, and I'd bring Pritchard in. Have Pritchard harass Brunson out on the perimeter. You know, if he picks up three, four fouls, good. Just let him harass him. And he gets the loose balls. He's a better defensive player than you think. He's certainly better than Al Horford on the perimeter as a defender. So I'm sure they'll make some adjustments. They have to, because it's not looking good right now, just as far as their confidence. And I think just as a coach, sometimes you have to just tweak something where it's not a big tweak, but it just gives the team an idea and something in their head. Well, okay, coach has made an adjustment here. We're going to do this differently, and it'll help us. And certainly the Knicks aren't invincible. They lost two home games to the Pistons in the first round. So but New York can definitely lose two to Boston this weekend. But the Knicks have to make, the Celtics have to make some tweaks in order to do it.
What's the challenge as a coach with a guy like Porzingis, where he's available, but apparently he's not available enough to start, which would be his normal role? You use him off the bench. He actually played more minutes in the second half than the first half, but it's still wasn't his normal workload. So I'm sure, like, you'd say, well, any Porzingis is better than none, but at the same time, that really changes your normal rotations.
Yeah, I don't understand why you wouldn't start him. You know, my philosophy always, and a lot of coaches I talk to agree with this. I mean, if you have a guy that is limited in minutes that is a starter, why wouldn't you just start him? He's the freshest at the beginning of the game. You know, why would you rest him when he's already rested, if you know what I mean? You know, when the clock starts, he's already been resting. Okay, so just play him until he's tired. So the mystery illness part is baffling. Obviously, there's something there, but I would expect him to be back in the starting lineup tomorrow. I would think that would be another one of their tweaks just to try to give them a little life. He's played well at MSG in the past. He's made a lot of shots in that building. I think he likes playing there against the Knicks since he was there. I would think they're going to start him, but I would. I wouldn't start the game with him on the bench if he's ready, if he's available to play.
Good coaching insight. Tim Welsh, former Providence head coach, joining us here on Jones and Keefe. Again, you can check him out Sunday mornings, 103.7 WEEI in Providence with Meter. When it comes to the end of the game sequence, the final 12 seconds, whatever it was, did you think Mazzulla should have initially called a timeout? What did you think of him running the same play a second time? Should he have bailed Tatum out on that play with a timeout? Like, what did you think of that whole approach to the final sequence?
Well, I think it's not even debatable. You have to call the timeout. First of all, there's only 12 seconds to go. When you call the timeout, you get the ball at half court. So now you're saving some seconds, not having to bring the ball up the full length of the floor. So now you get the ball at half court. You can design a lot of different things from the sidelines differently. You have a myriad of plays that you have from the sideline out of bounds. And then you got to go quickly. You can't wait to take the last shot because it's either, you know, make or miss and win or lose on that one shot. And you're putting too much pressure on that one play. You've got to go quickly to the basket to, number one, give yourself a chance for an offensive rebound and then a put back to win. Or number two, if you don't make it, a chance to foul quickly and then get the ball back again and maybe take a three. You know, if you're down three, go for the three at the end because Thibodeau doesn't foul. Down three. We've seen that in the past. We saw it at MSG when Tatum made the three to send the game in overtime the last time they played in the regular season. So I just think that you have to rethink that. Even if you want to run the same play, whatever, that's fine. But you got to try to get the ball at half court, and you've got to try to go a lot sooner than they did.
Tim, good question here from our text line. As going back to your days at Providence, Joe Mazzulla, of course, a Rhode Island product. He ended up at West Virginia. I'm curious, did you guys recruit Joe Mazzulla? And what, if anything, do you remember about high school player Joe Mazzulla?
Well, we had a long relationship with Joe Mazzulla. He grew up like 10 minutes from our campus. So, and his dad was a high school coach. Dan was an excellent high school coach in Johnston, Rhode Island. And Joe came to our camp since he was in sixth grade all the way through high school. He was a very good high school basketball player at Hendricken. We did recruit him. We talked to him a lot over the years. It just didn't fit for him or for us at that time. Sometimes it's just the timing and the fit of your roster doesn't fit. We had a lot of guys that couldn't make shots. And Joe wasn't a great shooter at the time. But I'll tell you what, he had a heck of a college career at West Virginia. And I'll give you a little tidbit that I only saw is that my last game that I ever coached at Providence, I rewatched it for some reason. I don't know why. Oh, I think my son asked me, did you ever coach against Joe Mazzulla? I said, yeah, let's pop it on. And it was in the Big East tournament in Madison Square Garden, and he scored the final basket of my career.
Wow.
So that's something we'll I don't think I've ever told Joe that. I think I just looked that up this year when we were watching Celtic games or whatever. But, no, he was an excellent player, played for John Beilein and Bob Huggins. You know, got West Virginia to the Final Four.
Yeah.
And I know Bob Huggins just loved him as a player and as a leader. And a lot of the coaches that I know in not only in the NBA, but the college guys, Joe was very, very active during COVID, setting up Zooms with other coaches around the country, just talking basketball almost every other day during COVID when no one had anything to do. So glad he got this opportunity. He's worked hard. He's came up in a coach's family. And I know Brad had no thoughts other than Joe Mazzulla putting him into that seat. And you know, he's grown as a coach. We saw the first year he didn't call timeouts enough. Mm-hmm. And the other night, if Tatum gets to his right hand, we're probably not even having this conversation whether he should have called a timeout or not. I mean, that's easy to second guess, but I absolutely, Tatum's got to understand you got to go quicker. And the other thing I would have done in that situation is when you rewatch the play is Brunson's out on the right wing. I would have started Tatum somewhere away from the ball and then have him come back and try to get him in another switching situation where maybe he's on Brunson has to guard him. But when he came right down the middle of the floor, he got tangled up and they forced him to his left and the rest is history. So we'll see what happens tomorrow. But I have a feeling that Tatum's going to come out and be very motivated tomorrow and you're going to see a different guy.
Speaking of history, Joe Mazzulla gets the final bucket against Tim Welsh at Providence. I would have wagered on Pittsnoggle, Keith.
Oh, you thought Pittsnoggle?
I would have thought it was Pittsnoggle.
Or Gansey?
You guys were shutting him down, Pittsnoggle.
Yeah, it was kind of a nothing play. It wasn't a one-point game. I think we lost by 5 or something like that. But that team did go to the Final Four, and Joe was a pain in the neck. We watched the game. He was a pain in the neck to play against because he was all over you defensively. He was a hard-nosed, tough, hard-nosed kid. And he became a good shooter and became a solid offensive player, which he really wasn't growing up because he was so good getting to the rim. He really never worked on his perimeter game. And then once he started really getting into shooting the basketball, he became a good player.
Well, did they play like a 1-3-1? Because there was a clip going around the other day on Instagram of West Virginia versus Kentucky, and you have little Joe Mazzulla like bodying DeMarcus Cousins
at the bottom of the
and like pushing him out of the lane and stuff. Is that what they ran?
Yes, yeah, they did. And well, first when he first went there, John Beilein famously played a lot of 1-3-1, and then John left and went to Michigan, and Huggins came in and coached Joe. And yes, and Huggins told me this, that one of the reasons they got to the Final Four is Joe told them to switch defenses at some point, maybe it was in the Elite Eight game, and play the 1-3-1. And yes, they played it a lot, and Joe was in the back of it. And that's usually put your toughest, hard-nosed defender, guy who can get from one side of the court to the other the fastest, in the back. And Joe did play the back. They played a lot of 1-3-1. But Huggins, to this day, credits Joe for – you know, even helping him with some coaching situations as a player.
Yeah. All right, excellent stuff. Tim Welsh, former Providence head coach. Catch him Sunday mornings on 103.7 in Providence with Meter. Follow him on Twitter, at TimWelsh5. Tim, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
All right, guys, anytime. Great to be with you.
Thank you.
All right, Tim Welsh joining us here on Jones and Keefe. High noon. Looking ahead to the Celtics and the Knicks game 3 tomorrow. Mm-hmm. He expects changes. He expects big things out of Jason Tatum in this game.
And putting it on Tatum, right? If Tatum plays better in the first two games, they're up 2-0.
Putting it on Tatum. He didn't like the hack of Mitch. Didn't like not calling a timeout. Yeah, he had some criticism for Mazzulla, too.
Yeah.
A lot on Tatum, which I would agree with him on. You can jump in on that, 617-779-7937. More of your Celtics thoughts. Brian Windhorst had an interesting answer about the stakes of this series.
Our horse of the week?
Our horse, not to be confused with horse of the week.
Our horse of the week?
Our horse of the week. Brian Windhorst, what are the stakes of this series for the Celtics? We'll get to that right after Trending with Billy Laney.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50. Code LISTEN50.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
How's Brian Windhorst yesterday? What are the stakes of this series? The stakes are changes are happening, which we've heard. And I think he throws in an interesting line there at the end. Do they even want to stay together? Like, we're going to start to find out.
If yeah, this goes, a second-round exit certainly is a different offseason conversation than winning the title, losing in the finals, even losing in the conference finals.
100%. And like, I don't know, we thought there were problems with the Kyrie team in 2019, yeah, right?
We were right.
When they lost to the Bucks, that team didn't play like they wanted to stay together. They won game one. They swept Indiana. They won game one. Things were easy. They started to hit some adversity, and they fell apart and lost four straight. I mean, if you get swept by New York, the message is going to be not only are changes happening, these guys may not want to stay together. I mean, that would be some of the message there to me. Do you fight? Do you rally? They dug out of a 3-0 hole against Miami a few years ago to force a game seven. Now, that team, ironically, may have wanted to stay together. They got broken up.
Yeah.
And they won a championship because of it. But you may see some of that and find out some of that in these next couple of games. I agree with Windhorst on the stakes. The stakes are you don't win.
Stakes are high.
Chisholm's breaking the team up. Hell, you win. You might get the team broken up. So those are the stakes.
Yeah. I mean, huge. I think it's one of those ones where it's easier to break up the team if you lose early. And I mean, it's kind of obvious, right? So if they want to stay together, they may not have a choice, right? Or maybe less pieces get removed, right? Because it's all about the second apron and all that nonsense. So you figure out a way, say they win the title or they get really close and they, you know, 7-game series against the Thunder. Maybe you move on from one piece and you try to keep it together. You lose to the Knicks in round two, and if you get blown out in the series, it's, all right, we'll keep Tatum and Brown, and we'll kind of figure out the rest after that.
Right.
Right? Like, there's a possibility that it's that drastic.
Including Mazzulla.
Yeah, the whole thing.
Because I've said this, Keith, I personally would not fire Mazzulla for losing to the Knicks. I wouldn't.
No, wouldn't? No, I would not.
Even if they get swept, I wouldn't. They won a title 2 years ago. I would keep it together, and I'd try to figure it out with the coach personally.
Well, track record for guys winning titles is not great.
It's not. And he would go in the next year on the hot seat.
Yes.
But if Tatum's like, this guy's yelling at me to get up. He's blaming me for game two. He's blaming the whole team for missing shots in game one. I mean, I think it's in play that if you lose to the Knicks, he could get fired. I personally wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
But it's in play. It's also in play. Bill may not coach a game at UNC.
I still say he does.
No, me too.
He does. But no, the fact that it's like a straight face conversation is wild.
It's on the table that Bill doesn't even get a game at UNC. The report earlier today from Pablo Torre that Jordan Hudson is banned from the football facility. The family is digging in on Jordan Hudson. They're very uncomfortable with the whole situation.
Yeah.
And on top of that, she tried to force her way into a commercial. I think we figured out what the commercial is. Somebody sent us an underdog commercial where Bill is poolside. That would make sense for Jordan.
There we go. Okay.
Her yellow polka dot bikini, her sun hat trying to force her way in. They turned on. Well, they didn't turn on a camera.
They did a fake film.
They faked her out, filmed her, as Pablo Torre reported earlier today. Now, UNC has shot this down. They put out a statement. While Jordan is not an employee of the University of North Carolina, she is welcome to the Carolina football facilities.
Jordan, she has season tickets.
Jordan will continue to manage all activities related to Coach Belichick's personal brand outside of the responsibilities for Carolina football and the university. There's been yet another update to the story, Keith.
Ooh, an update to the update.
Pablo Torre responding to UNC's statement. He says, P.S. UNC can now choose to describe or change its position on Jordan Hudson's involvement
however
it wishes.
Yeah.
Following the publication of our episode, we requested comment and filed dozens of FOIA requests, Freedom of Information.
Yeah, sure.
That were
I know that.
Not satisfied. And we stand by the specific reporting in our episode, which came from the highest levels of the football program. Torrey also said, we broke the news of an important meeting where UNC higher-ups told the football program Jordan can't be around the facility anymore. Many people around the team heard that message very clearly. You can decide who to trust in terms of how the PR spin goes from here.
It's almost as if North Carolina tried to tell Pablo Torre to pound sand, and then Pablo Torre was like, okay, I stand by it.
It's almost like that, Keith.
It's almost like that.
It's very, very, very similar to that.
Because you can probably go through different nuance. You'd be like, well, she's not banned from like the whole campus. Like, they can probably weasel their way out of it to make it sound like it's not true, but I'm guessing that Pablo Torre...
Or to his point, you can just change your position on it.
He talked to dozens of people. He talked for this whole thing.
He said he had 11 sources.
Well, he had 11 sources there, but then even like the next layer. Oh, yeah, yes. This is specific to that. He had a lot today. But the story about like the commercial, he spoke to dozens of people for that.
Yes.
But yeah, no, as far as what North Carolina has said and whether she's banned or not, this isn't like he heard from one person on Instagram. Like this guy really, he had plenty of sources.
He did.
And before he even went on his podcast, he allowed North Carolina to respond and they were like, no.
No, we're good.
And now we have to. I just find it comical. So you can choose to believe what you want. You can say this guy's making everything up or he's 100% right.
This is how you lose a job very quickly. The fact that he's going to have a job after this is insane.
It's Brad Marchand on Pablo Torre.
It's insane.
Yeah, Brad Marchand does not like the reporting of Pablo Torre and or Scoops Keefe. Yeah.
Go Maple Leafs. Hearing that again, that is a hard thing to hear. My hero, Brad Marchand, calling for my job.
My guy.
But your guy.
My former guy.
Not anymore.
Formerly my guy.
Used to be your guy. But like people can change.
My former guy.
No, your former guy.
That's not
Brad Marchand. Everybody knows famously your former guy. But I just love the idea that Bill Belichick, like the no distractions Bill Belichick guy, has had multiple press releases by his school about his girlfriend in like the span of 2 weeks. And the season hasn't even started yet.
I think with Miss Maine this weekend, we haven't seen the last of it. I mean, no, you can jump in on all this. Very busy day. Bill and Jordan at UNC. Rafael Devers refusing to play first base. That's blown up. We also have Celtics game 3 tomorrow. Johnny in Brooklyn wants to discuss that. Go ahead, Johnny.
My guys, thanks for taking my call. Long time no speak. I love the Belichick story. Even the Devers story is hilarious. It's all just fun and games. But on the Celtics, I'm worried about Porzingis. I don't know what's going on with this dude, and it concerns me just long term. And Almazula, I mean, to me, yeah, Tatum had a bad game, but, like, you have options to get points and to just let them do whatever they want. Like, Jaylen Brown was getting whatever he wanted in the post, and you just need a couple of baskets to win these games. And he's just, like, letting the go of the rope and being like, well, we'll all learn from it or something. I'm not loving it. But I love the show.
Oh, all thank right. you, Johnny.
Well,
thank
Johnny,
you.
We appreciate that.
There are a lot of hot topics today.
There are. You heard from Tim Welsh earlier this hour. If you missed any of the interview, former Providence head coach, it's on the Odyssey app, AUDACY. I think he made the best point about Porzingis. If you're playing Porzingis in the game, shouldn't you start him? Isn't it way easier to manage his minutes and keep him fresh if you're starting him?
Yeah, you're staying consistent. You shouldn't have to change your ways of going about things against the Knicks, right? Like, that's why we talk about the Mitchell Robinson thing. But even when it comes to like substitution patterns and things like that, I would keep it consistent. If he can play, he can play at the start of the game. To his point, you don't need to. He's already rested. It's the most rested you can be. You don't need to like wait 6 minutes or 8 minutes to put him in the game. And it's I don't know. Is there like a minute restriction or just how he looks? Like, I don't know what it is, because there was a stretch there in the third quarter I thought he looked okay, and then he really didn't play much at all in the fourth quarter, even when they were going through that huge slump.
No. If you were going to place out the blame between Tatum and Mazzulla, a blame pie, I would go 90-10 Tatum, 10%. Mazzulla's on my list.
For the series or for game two?
I guess.
So for game two, I give Mazzulla a lot more of it than game one. But if you're just adding the series together, it's probably more like 80-20.
Yeah.
I mean, the best player.
What about for how much for Mazzulla? Like 50-50 with Tatum? Would you go? Would you even go that high? I wouldn't go that high.
No, not that high, but I'd probably go...
But more on Tatum than Mazzulla.
66-33. Like, I was really annoyed with how he handled the end of the game.
Well, I was really annoyed with Mazzulla.
And post-game. The Hacker Mitchell thing. That's not Tatum.
I hated that.
Right.
But no, I most of my annoyance with Mazzulla wasn't even, besides the Mitchell stuff, in-game stuff. I think he should have called a timeout in the final 6 seconds, but that, you know, I wouldn't have called a timeout on the inbounds. I would disagree with Tim Welsh on that. I would have called it once the play broke down.
Right.
But I wouldn't have called it on the inbounds. I didn't mind running the same play a second time. I didn't mind any of that. I hated how he handled it after the game. So you can jump in on that, 617-779-7937. Twitch chat, 11 sources is not enough for the Twitch chat, Keith.
Not enough.
No.
Oh, my God.
That was 11 sources.
That's a ton of sources.
Again, 11 sources just on the Jordan story, never mind on all of his reporting. Freedom of information.
I don't think I know 11 people, let alone it could be a source on something.
I couldn't get you 11 sources on anything.
No.
Nothing. But I guess that's not enough for the Twitch chat. 11 sources,
they are not satisfied. They want more.
They like the one UNC statement. That one statement from UNC who has reason to lie about this.
Well, Twitch chat's always very pro-Belichick, so I think Bill and Jordan should actually hop in the Twitch chat. They'd feel great. They'd be like, see, people really are on our side.
No, the Twitch chat has been notoriously right about all this Bill stuff.
Definitely.
I mean, that's a good place
from day one, all
of the very accurate and on-the-nose Bill takes, for sure. But I guess 11 sources, not satisfactory.
No, all right.
617-779-7937. You can jump in here. We have the Week in Review next. Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. We'll get to the Week in Review momentarily. Reviewing what was a big week here on Jones and Keefe. We're also looking ahead to Game 3, Celtics and Knicks tomorrow. And who better to look ahead to Celtics and Knicks than our next caller? This is Aztec Gino.
All right.
Number one Celtics superfan, it says on my screen. Hello, Aztec Gino.
Oh, yeah, how we doing? Jones and Keith, thanks for taking my call, guys.
No problem.
No, so listen, I want to thank you guys because when you guys did Keith Keys, I noticed that you guys did like the 10 celebrity fans and you guys put Aztec Gino number 3.
Of course.
So, thank you for doing that. I also saw you put Balcony Gino and you also did Nate Dogg. And, you guys ticked off a lot of other fans. Because you know there are other super fans too.
Oh, so who do we miss?
Biggest snub.
Yeah, who was the biggest snub in your estimation?
No. Well, no, don't forget the original Big Five: Aztec Gino, Nate Dogg, Balcony Gino, and then of course you have to remember Guy with Green Hair, and of course Mr. Celtics Nation or Bob Marley. Those guys are like the original starting five.
I noticed you snubbed Chicken Hat Guy.
Well,
that's Nate Dogg, and I think Jones says he does know Nate Dogg. Yeah, he goes by the name Nate Dogg or Chicken Hat Guy.
Chicken Hat Guy. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we all have those names.
All right, my apologies to Guy with green hair. He's good. My bad.
But it's all good, guys, because
look at Peyton Pritchard's face. Poor guy.
No, we all do our best.
Yeah.
To represent Celtics Nation. But the thing is, I wonder, dare say, that everyone is panicking with the Celtics being 2-0, guys. Guys, this is now 4 out of 5, right? This series is now the best out of 5.
Nope.
The Celtics,
well, the
as you know, is
two.
A hazard. Yeah, I understand that. But hold on. The Celtics are the road warriors of the NBA. We have a better road record than home record. I'm telling you, we're going to go down there. We're going to kick their butt. We're going to win the next 2 games. We're going to win game 5, guys. I'm telling you, it's Celtics in 7. Why is everyone panicking? I was talking to Nate Dogg today, Chicken Head Guy. He was like, Gino, what's wrong with everyone? I bleed green. We're going to win. And then he made reference to the 2004 Yankees-Red Sox series when we came back, guys.
Right,
I mean,
sure.
Come on, guys.
Aztec, let me ask you a question. Do you have any run-ins with Knicks fans? I was a little concerned. The first 2 games of this series, there's just a tremendous amount of Knicks fans.
Bloodbath.
But you know what? Let me ask you guys something. These Knicks fans, they're obnoxious. They provoke us. I mean, they act like they own TD Garden, guys. These guys are bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pathetic. I mean, we have the best fans in the NBA. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. Always call out our fan base. You guys know that.
Yeah.
Best fan base in the NBA. Thank goodness we don't stoop to their level. I mean, I have no idea how, I mean, it's bad, guys, to see how they're obnoxious, how they get on at TD Garden. You know, it's an embarrassment.
Now,
and our fans never stoop to their level.
Will you guys travel to MSG, or are you just going to, you'll see them back here for game 5?
You guys like carpool together?
Yeah, well, it's so funny. I wish we could have gone because we spoke about that, the Celtics super fans, that we need to go there too and represent our team. But, time was so limited, we couldn't make it. But definitely we're planning to be there probably outside TD Garden tomorrow to get the fans all together. And again, I mean, this series 4 out of 5. We are excellent road warrior team. Why is everyone panicking?
Are you guys all in a group chat? Are you and Green Hair Guy, Chicken Head Guy, Balcony Gino? Are you guys all in a group chat?
Hey, you send memes?
Yeah. We're, yeah, in a group chat. And don't forget, you know, the other super fans too, like GRD, super fan Bree. You know, we have Caveman Causeway. We are close.
Caveman Causeway? Did you say Mike Giardi's one of you guys?
GRD, Green Raspberry. We are close-knit group. We are close-knit group, guys. Remember,
I love the Celtics.
Well, no, here's the thing, guys. The Celtics, we are family. Yeah, we are brotherhood. We are community, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Celtics Nation, right? We all close-knit. And this is why everyone, including the Knicks, are jealous of us.
I agree. Aztec Gino, this is a pleasure. Please call in anytime.
Yeah, can you call in? Call in Monday. We want to hear from you Monday, regardless of what happens in Game 3. Yeah. Call in Monday. We'll talk to you on Monday, all right, Aztec Gino?
Yeah. And listen, next time he does Keith Keys, tell Keith to mention the other super fans too.
Yeah, Keith. Good Lord. Yeah, I only had 10 spots.
Keith, what's wrong with you?
I had to include Donnie Wahlberg.
Caveman Cosway. How do you leave him out?
Oh, there he is.
All right, guys. What a pleasure. Thanks. Go Celtics. Hey,
thank you, Aztec.
Aztec Gino, great stuff.
All right.
Here we go. Stay jealous of ourselves.
Let me tell you. I think Christy in the Twitch chat had the...
was her.
Had the line I of missed the, it. The take there is we need to replace Tommy Curran with Aztec Gino every week.
It's an Aztec Gino Tuesday here on Jones and Keefe. He's fired up. He's not worried about it. It's not a best of three series, Jones. It's a best of seven.
No, it's about, well now it's you got to win 4 out of 5. And why is everybody panicking? But so okay, I like the idea of them all in a group chat together. I do.
Isn't that amazing?
Like that. Yeah.
Those guys.
Yeah, they're renting a party bus down to New York.
It's the same thing. You guys going to the game tonight?
Yes.
Yeah. Just five yeses.
I'll be there.
I'll see you guys there.
Never miss a game.
Well, I'll see you there. You gonna wear the same clothes that you wore to the last game?
Yes.
Yeah,
I'll be there. I go to work like this.
Do you want to go outside the garden ahead of time, sign some autographs, take some photos?
Yes.
I love how he's calling Chicken Hat Guy Nate Dog.
This is why I thought we were getting trolled initially.
He's like, oh yeah, Nate Dog.
I didn't understand who Nate Dog was.
Respect those guys for listening to Keefe's Keys, though.
No, shut up.
That's good stuff.
Well, I thought he was about to go in on Balcony Gino. No, he was standing up for the rest of his Celtics fan brethren.
Twitch or on YouTube, Terp put up a photo of Peyton Pritchard somehow surrounded by all of these
just
super
Peyton
fans.
Pritchard evaluating his life.
Both Ginos. Green Hair Guy. I love how that's his name.
Yeah.
Guy with green hair.
Yeah.
He's like...
Maybe the
Keith, you forgot Guy with Green Hair.
Not to get yelled at by that guy calling him, but maybe the worst of the group is the Green Hair Guy.
You think that guy is?
Yeah, I think he's up there. Well, me and Chicken Hat Guy, I'm sorry, Nard Dog, what's his name again?
No, Nate Dog.
Nate Dog, I'm sorry.
He can harmonize.
Me and him are, he still has my hat from the Bruins game.
Yeah, you gave it to him. He didn't still have it. Like,
I didn't say he stole it. I just said he still has it.
He claims he was giving it to a friend. That friend could be Aztec Gino, for all we know.
I didn't even think about that. Hadn't even thought that through that far. Okay. Well, should we even review the week anymore at this point?
I think we should, but
we may have a new highlight for the week.
Are we going to maybe do it on the other side, though?
Yeah, let's slide the week in review. I think that was important to take that call.
I do, too.
Let's slide the week in review. We're going to bump up the grab bag. Mike Vrabel's live at 1:30. So stay tuned for all that. We'll get to it next.